Welcome to the Bunker Hill Cheesecast, brought to you by Heine's Cheese Chalet, a little place with big taste. I'm Missy Horsfall, Director of Tourism Relations. The history of cheesemaking dates back to 5500 BC, but it is thought to have begun even earlier than that. Nomads in the desert roamed from place to place, setting up their tents where there was grass and water. While they crossed the Sahara Desert, they carried goat milk and animal bladders on the backside of their camels. Arriving at their destination, they discovered that the rocking motion of the camels and the warm temperature had turned their goat milk into curd cheese. The rennet, that is an enzyme which helped coagulate the milk, inside the goat or calfskin bladder caused the curd to separate from the whey. Later, women hung goat skins full of milk on tripods and rocked it back and forth to get the same curd cheese. Vegetable or plant rennet is used for much of the cheese made today, but it is still this basic process of motion and temperature that we use with modern machinery. From the desert area, the people of Tibet carried the knowledge of cheese to Pakistan and India to the north, west, south, and eventually to England and Europe. Later, during the Dark Ages, monks recorded the knowledge of cheesemaking in their scrolls, and by Roman times, cheese was a common food and cheesemaking had become an art. In fact, Roman tradition was to finish a meal with curd cheese, wine, and fruit. Soldiers lived on meat and curd cheese because it didn't make them sick. The vastness of the Roman Empire spread the popularity of cheese and the art of cheesemaking across the known world. One of the interesting facts of history shows the connection of cheesemaking and our own little corner of the world here in Ohio's Amish country. The religious Amish sect found by Jacob Amann in the 1600s originated on the German-Swiss border. From the little valley known as Ammenthal Valley, they migrated all over the world, including Pennsylvania and Ohio. Ammenthaler, or Emmentaler cheese, is still being made today. In the early 1900s, many Swiss emigrated to Ohio, bringing their cheese-making skills with them from Switzerland, where the very popular Swiss cheese originated and was first made in the people's homes. Here in the New World, cheesemaking was also done in homes in small batches, often using a dry sink and a small granite bowl full of holes to drain the whey. This early cheese was known as schmear cheese, meaning smear or spread cheese in English. Later, a cheese press was used to remove the whey from the curds. The first kettles were copper on the inside and wood on the outside and surrounded by metal hoops. The hoops around the cheese were tightened by hitting the wedge of wood on the side of the press with a wooden mallet. To tighten the lid, you would use the turn screw on the top. This was done to shape the cheese and remove the whey. The lid was called a Kay's Deckel. Many of the cheese houses in our area of Ohio were one-kettle cheese factories. A large farm at that time had 7 or 8 cows, and the milk was hauled to the cheese house in a horse and buggy using metal milk cans. They made 1 or 2 kinds of cheese a day. While many of these small cheese houses are gone, quite a few remain, as well as larger cheese factories like Bunker Hill Cheese. Today, of course, our volume of cheese is much greater. At Bunker Hill Cheese Company, we use as many as 6 large vats, each vat holding between 15 to 22,000 pounds of milk, or 1,700 to 2,500 gallons of milk. You have to milk about 350 cows twice a day to fill these large vats. Although there have been many changes in the cheesemaking process through the years, one thing has held true. Our rich soil, climate, and quality milk-producing cows make a mighty fine cheese. My guest today is Myrna Slaybaugh. Hey, Myrna.
Hi.
Nice to have you with me today on today's podcast. Now, you work for Bunker Hill Cheese, correct?
Yes.
Yeah. What's your position in the company?
I am at the front desk.
And you know what? I'm just going to say it because I know you, Myrna, but you are the pivot on which everything kind of circles around.
I don't know.
It's awesome. Very important position and very, very big one for the company. And I might go back a little bit further. How long have you worked for the company?
8 years.
8 years.
It is. Unbelievable.
Wow. And I'm the one that kind of came and begged you to come work for me.
Yes, you did. You wanted me to work in the coffee shop.
And you did that probably, was it a couple of years anyway?
However long it was that we had the coffee shop. Then I went into retail.
Yep.
And ran cash register and interacted with customers and had a good time doing that. Then I was asked to come back and do the front desk.
Yep. And the front desk is a great place for you because you answer phones, you answer questions, you talk to people all the time. And honestly, we need someone like that that loves people and can communicate well. And one of the really great things about your being in that position is that you speak Dutch.
Mm-hmm. Yep, my first language.
It's your first
it's
language.
It's my first language. When I started to school, I could not talk English.
Is that right? Yep. Now, so how old were you when you began to, and were you just immersed in the English school then, or?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, Mom and Dad hadn't left the Amish that long before I started to school, and we talked Dutch at home.
Yeah.
So I started out hating school.
Oh,
because
I
couldn't talk English.
Yeah, I bet. Well, and this is one of the reasons why I wanted to have you on the podcast, because you've lived in this area your whole life, and your parents were Amish, as you said, and then they left the Amish.
Before I was born.
Before you were born. So it really hadn't been that long since they had been Amish. Now, you have brothers and sisters.
I had an older brother and sister, and they were both, you know, Amish. And then, yeah, they left between, my sister Carol's older than me, and before I came along, they had left.
Okay.
All maybe right. 3 years before I was born or
did,
something, I'm not sure.
Did you continue speaking Dutch in your home after you got into the English school and stuff, or is that... How long was that your first language, I guess, is that what I'm asking?
Well, I mean, definitely, you know, before I started school. But I think as us kids got older and as we were in school and, you know, we had English yes. friends, we started to lose it.
Yeah. And you didn't speak it at home. You spoke English and that's
right.
kind of how.
Yeah.
Now, your mom and dad, Mose and Mary Troyer, I just have to say, love them dearly. They're gone now, but what a legacy they've left. I interrupted you, though. You have, who are your other siblings? You had an older brother, older sister.
And then a younger sister and a younger brother.
Younger brother.
Mm-hmm. Five of us.
Right. And you're, actually, your younger brother is, he's your boss? Is that the way this works?
No.
I love that. Yeah. So it's generally, it is.
Just kidding.
Absolutely a family affair here at Heine's Cheese Chalet. And it's a lot of fun. Sometimes we say to Myrna, you go tell Bob, because, you know, you're his sister and he doesn't, you know, but he's a great boss.
Yeah,
I know he is.
And great guy.
Your family has a history and a legacy in this area that's really cool. One of the reasons I wanted to talk to you and kind of get your story was because you do come from a dual background, so to speak. Mm-hmm. You weren't raised Amish, but that heritage was certainly part of your upbringing.
Right.
Your mom and dad were Amish all their lives, I'm assuming, up to that point.
Yes.
Like they were raised in the Amish
yes.
Community. Their parents were Amish. It wasn't,
yes.
you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then when they chose to leave the Amish, what was that like for them? Was that a, you know, you hear a lot about shunning and that kind of thing. Did they keep in communication with their family or was there?
Mom's parents, I don't believe mom's parents shunned her, because mom and dad's parents were definitely believers in Jesus. Mm-hmm. They were wrapped up, you know, they were with the Amish culture, but they definitely had salvation experience.
So, and it made a little bit of difference for them in terms of how they didn't want to push their children away.
Right.
If they chose another
yeah.
lifestyle.
Yes. Dad got shunned.
Yeah. Yes. So there was a difference.
Yes.
And in yes. your family, you had both sides of it, actually. So
yes.
Now, I know there are a lot of changes in, I want to say changes in the Amish community. It comes very, very slowly, but there have been changes mm-hmm. in the Amish culture here in the area, as well as just changes in the English culture in the area in the last however many years. You know, when you consider how long you've lived in this area, it doesn't look anything probably like when you were young and were raised, right?
Right. No, the Amish had no telephones. They had no electricity.
Did they even work outside, like in English businesses and that kind of thing? Or?
Yeah. I mean, like Dad was a cheesemaker and he had Amish guys working for him. There was the brickyard. There were lumber places
yeah.
like that, but a lot more farmers.
Yes. Certainly thinking about, you know, the country as a whole, agriculture has kind of gone, dropped considerably.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, in our area, the agriculture part, the farming part is so important, especially as cheesemakers.
Mm-hmm.
And you brought up the fact that your dad is a cheesemaker, which is another reason why I wanted to have you on the podcast. Your sweet dad, when he started cheesemaking, give me a little bit of his background. Like, how did he get into that?
He worked for a Swiss guy from Switzerland
okay.
who came here. Alfred Boss was his name. And he taught Dad the ropes. And they actually, because of Dad's background, we're probably more of a mom and dad to Dad than what his own parents were. Actually, his dad passed away when Dad was quite young. He lived in with them,
okay.
and Alf taught him all the ropes to it. And then in time, Dad bought the cheese house from.
Okay, Alf. So he lived with him, he interned with him, and then he eventually took over the business. So do you remember, or can you tell me a little bit about that process or what that was like? I mean, like now, today, what we see today, for instance, here and other cheese factories are the big vats. Back then it was copper kettles.
It was the
right?
copper kettles, yes. And some of the farmers, the closer farmers, would bring their milk in on their, we called them hacks, you know, horse-drawn wagons, buggies, whatever. And then Dad also had cheese routes went out, or milk routes. And they went out and
picked up the cheese. He collected
the milk. Yes, within cans, came in and they dumped them and, you know, separated it.
So the milk comes in and your dad goes out and gets milk, brings it in. And you basically have to make cheese every single day of the week.
Yes, and in the summertime, Dad made cheese twice because they couldn't, he would make cheese Saturday morning and then Saturday night, he would make cheese again. He didn't separate the cream out of it. So the Saturday night cheese was like the best cheese because it was rich and full. When he would do the cheese Saturday nights, it was like entertainment for the neighbors because they would come in. Now you can't get into the plant here.
Right.
Then they came right into the plant. They were right there.
Watching him.
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah. So it was.
Now, did you ever have any part of the cheesemaking business? Did you do any of that, help out in any way? I'm just curious.
No.
Your older brother do any of that or just your dad?
Yes.
And it was just kind of basically a one-man show, right?
He had two employees, and he also like a truck driver, a guy that would come and pick up the milk and he'd, you know, drop it off and then he would go do whatever the rest of the day. But as far as two full-time employees.
Wow. And do you have any idea of like how much cheese he made a day?
No.
And how did it, how, like we have presses here. I'm just curious how, like what was the process? He would make it in the copper kettle and then did he make a great big wheel of cheese or how did that work?
Yeah. He had a big heavy cheesecloth that he would dip down into the kettle, bring it up with a pulley and a hook.
Wow.
And swing it over above the hoop and drop it down and then put the lid on. And then he had this mechanism that went on top and he would turn it to squeeze out the whey.
Yeah.
And then like before, later on in the evening, he would have to go back to the factory, which we lived upstairs. We had an apartment above the factory, but he would go down and he would flip the cheese and that was all done by hand.
Wow.
And then he would squeeze out more whey. And then by morning, then it was ready to go into the big salt brine.
Did it create a brine around the cheese itself? And is
the rind,
the rind?
Yes.
And that's how he sold it, in the big wheel?
Mm-hmm.
Or okay.
Yeah, the customers would come in. I mean, cheese and ice cream is the only thing that we sold.
Uh-huh.
But the customer would come in and say, I'd like a pound of cheese. So Dad knew how much a pound would weigh, so he would just cut it off the wheel and weigh it and wrap it up.
Give it to him. Mm-hmm. Did he made his own ice cream then, I'm assuming?
No, not the ice cream, no.
Well, I mean, ice cream and cheese, what more do you need,
really?
Right? I find this so fascinating, and I love the fact of the history and the connection that you have. I sometimes forget that Bob, you know, my boss here, he's married to Lisa, whose family this cheese house is, and he's been here for years, so he's been involved in it forever. But I forget that as a young man, as a young boy, that's his background too.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. It's crazy, the connections, when you stop and think about it, in the community and even in the cheese house itself. I've said before that this is a family operation. It always has been. It always will be. And there's some really positive things about that and some really cool things when you look and see the connections and so forth. You know, one of the other things I wanted to talk to you about was, it's kind of threefold. You have the background of as a young child of watching your dad do the cheese. So you know cheese curds like nobody's business. And you know whether they're good or not and how you like them fresh. You won't.
Oh, yeah.
They got to be right out of the vat or they're
warm,
not any good.
Warm so they squeak when you chew on them.
Yeah. You have that cheese background. You've also come from an Amish background, even though you were raised English. And that heritage is still part of your life. Absolutely, I would say.
Yeah, yes.
I mean, you speak, as we said, you speak Dutch. You understand the girls. I hear you all the time flowing in and out of Dutch.
I try to be gracious with those who don't talk.
Well, that's very kind. And I've tried to learn some, and it just really hasn't stuck. So See, you have that, but it's even deeper embedded into the fabric of who you are, I think. This background from the Amish and the idea of faith, family, and community and how important those things are. I believe your mom and dad, even though they left the Amish community so they could worship in a church that was different from the Amish church, they took with them that deep belief in their faith in God, their faith in Jesus, and their family and the community. And they walked that out for the rest of their life. And I knew them in their later years. But you could see that they'd lived it all their life and they were wonderful people. And that there's some heritage there that you have to be thankful for, I think.
Absolutely. Yeah. And you don't have to go far to see people who don't have that. And I think that's why we just appreciate that heritage so much.
Yeah. I really do believe, and I'm an outsider. I wasn't raised here, but what I've seen about this area and what I've come to appreciate and love is that community, is that feeling of sort of the legacy and the generations that go back, you know, that there's a rootedness here. There's a stability. It's different. It's very different. And I think when people visit the area, they can feel it and they may not be able to understand what it is they feel, but they know that it's different. First of all, it's very picturesque, obviously, but even in the community, when they go into the shops in the town and the towns around, and it's just a different atmosphere. It's a different way of thinking. It's a different culture in itself.
Absolutely.
And some of that culture may be kind of hard to understand because I'm sure, you know, with TV shows and everything else and, you know, the idea of who and what the Amish are. The thing is, the Amish are people.
Absolutely. And they are just like anybody
else. They're just like all of us and we're all different. And so, you know, to base something on one person or, you know, one small group, that doesn't work for anybody in any culture. You have to recognize that people are people and they have personalities. And so the thing that I think confuses people is the number of maybe different things that they hear, the things they do and the things they don't do, the things they allow and the things they don't allow. And maybe it changes here and this person will do this and this person won't do that. But, you know, it's interesting. When I think about that, I kind of compare it to being quote unquote Protestant. There are a lot of different churches that are Protestant, right?
Yes.
As opposed to being Catholic, and Catholic churches are different for that matter. So the differences that we see in the Amish culture, in the Amish churches, like we said before, it's just like anybody else. They're different. Yeah. And so the third thing, and the reason that I wanted to have you on the podcast, was because you grew up in this area and because what you do essentially with your job, even with your job here, in answering the phones and talking with people. And you probably spend a lot of time talking to people who want to know about the area or where they can, what can they do? What can they see? What's open? What's going on?
Right.
That's all about the tourism in the area, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's nice to know, for me, to know where to send people when they ask.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I don't have all the answers.
Well, but you've lived here, so you have
a
few.
Yes, and that. Mm-hmm. Advantage, definitely.
That is definitely an advantage. One of the questions that I've been asking people is what are the changes that you've seen since you grew up here? I mean, you've lived your whole life in this area, basically within maybe a 50-mile, 60-mile radius, something like that. What are the changes you've seen in this area? The biggest change, the biggest difference from when you were growing up to now?
Probably just the traffic and there were not hotels, motels, all these stores, that kind of thing growing up. And I remember us kids used to get in the car before we had our license and drive to our friend's house or whatever. I would never have let my kids do that now.
Yeah. Yeah. The good old days for
traffic.
Those of us who are older. We kind of all want to say that. And truly, change is inevitable and it comes. And in our area, it's probably slower maybe than other places simply because of the Amish influence and the resistance to technology and that kind of thing because of the distraction. This is how someone explained it to me, and I think it makes so much sense, that the technology and all those, the things that they ban, the reason they quote unquote ban them is so that the focus can remain on faith, family, and community. And there's less distraction. And that makes a lot of sense.
Yes.
It makes a lot of sense. And I think it's one of the things that's appealing about the Amish culture is because you can see that that's where the focus is. And it sort of naturally slows things down a little bit. The speed at which you live your life is slowed down and you appreciate more of the simple kinds of things. Mm-hmm. And don't get me wrong, there's problems everywhere. So,
oh, absolutely. Yeah.
I mean, it's here too. It's everywhere you go. But the influence of that, I think, has been very, very impactful. And as I think about the tourist industry growing in this area, one of the things that I've appreciated about as I work in this area and I'm out in the community and dealing with other businesses is that I see that there has been a real effort to keep the good things about being small. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. That it's a small town. The heritage that we have, the Mennonite and Amish heritage that we have of faith, family, and community, that's still important. So even if we grow, which we want to grow because we're part of the tourism business, and I think it came out of a real heart of desiring other people to come, see, share in what we have here, because it's very unusual. It's very different.
Yes.
It's unique. It's a unique atmosphere. It's a unique culture. I think the tourism grew out of that desire to have people come and see and taste that and share that. But the hotels and the businesses and all those things, as we grow, there's traffic problems now. And I mean, we had traffic problems before because we had, you know, our traffic jams are, you know, the cows crossing the road to get from the field and, or the buggies or bicycles or whatever it is. But, and those, they may be inconveniences of a sort, they're also a reminder to slow down.
Oh, yeah. And I wouldn't give it up for anything.
Yeah.
I mean, having grown up with it is just part of life.
Yeah.
You come up behind a buggy, you slow down. It's part of life.
Yeah. I mean, if we lived in another area of the country, there would be another kind of traffic issue to deal with. So, again, we're all the same. It's just our differences.
Different.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And the differences are really minor when you think about it in terms of it's just different how we live our life. It's not better, worse, any of those things. People who love the city, and that's great. And people who love the country, and that's great. So thankful for both, and thankful for, we're very thankful for the tourists who have an interest in our area and that come and can share in some of that. So it's sometimes hard to put your finger on what that is about this area. But I think you exemplify that, and your story exemplifies the things that I really love about Ohio's Amish country. You have a legacy through your parents and your grandparents, your great-grandparents. You have, you've continued that legacy with your own family. And in being a part of the community, this community, it's such a special thing. It really, truly is. And so really thankful that you were on the podcast with me today, Myrna. And
thanks for having me.
Shared your story with me. Love it that you're here and part of the Heine's family here. And listener, if you call in and get somebody on the phone, you'll probably be talking to Myrna. So she would be happy to chat with you if you have any questions, for sure, about Heine's Cheese Chalet or the area, or even some questions about the Amish, I'm sure that you can answer to as well. So it's awesome. Thanks again.
Thank you.
And now it's time for Did You Know? Did you know that up until 2018, all of the milk used to make Bunker Hill cheese, formerly named Heine's cheese, was brought to the cheese house in milk cans? With over 250 local Amish farms supplying our milk, we upgraded from the horse and buggy to having delivery trucks to haul the milk to the plant. Each of the cans were marked and numbered with the farmer's number and literally dumped into the holding tanks. The milk was tested then, as it is now, so as not to taint the whole load. When government regulations stipulated that we move to bulk milk rather than cans, most of our local farmers were able to make the move with us. Those that were unable to were transitioned to smaller cheese houses still able to accept milk in cans. While the change has signaled a move into the future, we hold on to the tradition of all-natural, small-batch, handcrafted cheese with European tradition. And now you know.